Although sheer numbers may not be the best way to gauge the effectiveness of suspension and debarment, the rate at which agencies have been using those tools in recent years does tell a story. In 2010, the most recent year for which government-wide statistics are available through the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee, agencies took 4,200 suspension, debarment, and proposed debarment actions. That compares to 2,700 the year before. And in the Defense Department, which provided data for 2011, and which accounts for about 70% of all government contracting dollars, the trend continued. The military departments and the Defense Logistics Agency barred 1,525 contractors from government business last year, compared to 1,398 the year before, and 1,024 in 2009.
We've had a very significant increase in the number of companies and individuals we've been representing in suspension and debarment matters, where we would have three or four in a year, we probably have 10 to 15 right now in a year.
That's Angela Stiles, a partner at the law firm Crowell & Mooring and the chair of the firm's government contracts practice. She says pressure from Congress to increase the use of suspension and debarment is definitely a factor. Also, she says, agencies seem to be using the wide discretion they have under the Federal Acquisition Regulation to a much greater degree. She says most companies used to have to worry about being suspended or debarred only if they committed misconduct that was directly related to a federal contract. That's no longer the case.
If you have a settlement with the SEC, if your contract is terminated for default, if you make a mandatory disclosure to the Inspector General, that you need to be prepared to also go into your suspension and debarment official simultaneously and explain why these problems aren't going to happen again. I think people used to think that it was limited to there's fraud on a federal contract, and it's really not limited to that anymore. I think the suspension and debarment officials really consider that they have much greater breadth.
Stiles says in most cases, companies tend to avoid being placed on the government's excluded parties list if they discuss problems early with their agency suspension and debarment officials, show that they are responsible contractors, and present a detailed plan to avoid future problems. And she says the agencies that have well-established, mature suspension and debarment programs, like DOD, the EPA, and GSA, treat companies fairly. But Stiles claims the push from Capitol Hill to suspend and debar more contractors has caused agencies that don't have a lot of experience in the area to push forward anyway.
There's a number of agencies that have only suspended or debarred companies under pressure from Congress, even though they haven't in years suspended or debarred any company. And I think in those situations, they really didn't understand what the processes were. They didn't understand that they could enter into an administrative agreement with the companies. And, you know, there are examples where these agencies put viable companies out of business. And that's really not the purpose of the rules. So there are many examples of that at the civilian agencies because they didn't really fully understand their authorities. They didn't understand what due process should really be put in place. And they, I think, were reactive to congressional pressure as well.
Under federal law, suspension and debarment in procurement cases can't be used as punishment against companies. Its only purpose is to protect the government against potentially unscrupulous contractors. Nonetheless, experts from both inside and outside of government agree that fact is widely misunderstood. Steve Shaw has been the Air Force's suspension and debarment official for the past 15 years. He'll leave that post later this month to join the government contracts practice at a private law firm.
A lot of people think that debarment is punishment, and there are some on the Hill that feel that way as well, and that's a part, some would say, of the trend towards automatic debarments. It's not punishment. The real focus is the present responsibility. Punishment is great, and it's an important goal, but it's an important goal of the criminal justice system. It's not an important goal of the procurement system. So that's a misunderstanding, and it's all the more important that contractors need to engage with debarring officials and talk about processes and ethics programs and remedial measures as opposed to exclusively whether the misconduct occurred or not.
Mm-hmm. The Air Force is routinely near the top of the list in terms of sheer numbers of suspensions and debarments. Shaw says that's partially due to the fact that he's one of only three suspension and debarment officials in government that works on the issue full time. He and his staff don't wait for complaints about contractors to flow into their inbox. They proactively look for activities that might show that a current contractor is irresponsible.
We look at the types of misconduct more broadly than some other agencies do. The Federal Acquisition Regulation says, for example, that if there's an indictment or a conviction, that's sufficient as a matter of law to establish a debarment or a suspension. So debarring officials that are concerned about being sued or are concerned about the quality of their staff or whatever might wait only to do a debarment or suspension when there's a conviction or an indictment. We don't do it that way in the Air Force. We certainly do those cases where appropriate, but we don't wait for an indictment or conviction. We go out aggressively and look at the facts, look at the underlying evidence, and it's been estimated that there's something like 70% of the cases that we do are based upon a review of the evidence where the Justice Department hasn't done anything yet.
But Shaw says more important than the numbers of suspensions and debarments his office issues is the preventative steps they take, routinely visiting contractors to help them build ethics procedures and compliance programs to help them avoid misconduct. Companies who take those steps, he says, are less likely to be barred from government business when a potential issue does pop up.
So if there's a contractor that I'm aware of that has a good ethical reputation and I trust them, I'm much more likely to send out a show cause letter than a suspension or a proposed debarment in the first instance, because I trust them to do the investigation and to be honest with me.
While suspension, debarment, and proposed debarment all bring with them different legal standards and serve different purposes for the government, the effect on contractors is the same in each case. They can't get any new government contracts or task orders until they're removed from the government's excluded parties list system. That last category, notices of proposed debarment, presents due process problems, according to some attorneys who represent companies. Rob Burton is a former government suspension and debarment official and federal procurement policy official. He's now a partner at the law firm Venable.
You could get a notice. You could go home today and open your mailbox, and there might be a letter there saying you were now proposed for debarment. The implication of that, the impact of that, is you cannot do business with the federal government, anyone in the federal government, as of right now. You have not had an opportunity to present any information to the government. You have not had an opportunity to defend yourself in any way. But the ultimate result is the same as debarment. Proposed debarment results in your inability to do business with the federal government until, and it could be a long until, the process is completed and a final determination is made with respect to your present responsibility.
Shaw says courts have upheld the practice, and his office does send out notices of proposed debarment without discussing the matter with a vendor ahead of time. But he says he shares the concern.
And because of that, we are extremely aggressive in getting to the bottom of these issues very quickly. So the timing on these is really driven by the contractor. There are several cases I can think of right now where we've taken a contractor off the list within 2 days because they've come to us with a good story about we want to engage in a dialogue. We've made these remedial measures, and let's take us off the list while we engage in this dialogue. So we look at this very quickly.
Norman Lussier, the Associate General Counsel for Contractor Responsibility at the Defense Logistics Agency, is also unpersuaded by industry complaints about the fairness of the proposed debarment process.
Someone who says that it's the first they've heard of the problem is being somewhat disingenuous. The reason we would issue a notice of proposed debarment is because we had a history of poor performance. And most companies know when they've delivered the wrong item over a series of contracts because there's been communication with the contracting officer. So for them to say they had no clue, not always correct.
DLA is also a huge user of the suspension and debarment process. Within DOD, its numbers were second only to the Army in fiscal year 2011. Lussier says that's partially a result of the fact that DLA does a whole lot of contracting.
DLA is responsible for buying all spare parts and depot-level repairables for the Defense Department, as well as all fuel. Mm. Think of it, Jared. All spare parts. We're doing in excess of 10,000 contracts a day. Congress and the American taxpayer, quite rightly, don't want to spend the public's money with contractors who've engaged in misconduct or who cheat the government. It's embarrassing and it's just wrong to continue to spend money to someone who's engaging in misconduct or who's delivering the wrong item over a series of contracts. There's lots of very good, reliable, legitimate businesses who deliver the right item. So we should avoid those who don't.
But private attorneys say they're seeing more and more suspension and debarment cases that don't have anything to do with current government contracts. Fred Levy is a partner at the firm McKenna, Long & Aldridge. He also serves as the co-chair of the American Bar Association's Committee on Suspension and Debarment. Like Stiles, he says he's representing more clients who were suspended or debarred because of issues outside of procurement, and sometimes because of issues that happened long ago.
I've had situations where a company, for example, was suspended several years after those events had happened. Unbeknownst to the suspension debarment official involved, the company had totally cleaned house. All of the offending employees were gone. All of the officers were gone. Even a number of the board members had been changed over. It was an entirely new company that had implemented extensive ethics and compliance measures. But here, a year and a half after making all of those changes, they find themselves suspended.
One issue the experts we spoke to inside and outside of government do agree on is that legislative provisions that automatically suspend contractors and take away agencies' discretion are a bad idea. Several such provisions were inserted by Congress into this year's various appropriations bills that took effect in January, automatically barring companies and individuals from government work if they were convicted of any criminal offense in the past 2 years. To get past that prohibition, they have to prove themselves individually to the suspension and debarment officials for any agency they want to do business with. Again, the Air Force's Steve Shaw.
It flips what is currently in place now. What is currently in place now enables the SDO, the debarring official, to make that determination in advance. Automatic exclusions is contrary to the good leverage that debarring officials can use by the discretion that they have. So the more and more we work towards these automatic exclusions, the more difficult it is to fight fraud.
And Levy says agencies aren't sure how they're supposed to follow the new process. He says in one recent case, an agency debarred his client by mistake because it shared the same name with a company that pled guilty to an environmental violation.
And as a result of the misunderstanding of the agency in terms of, and they're overreaching and just saying X corporation can't get work, this subsidiary that never had a felony conviction was in a position of saying, look, I'm going to have to furlough employees because our customers are holding up orders. And until this is clarified, and until the fifth agency makes a determination that it's okay for us to get work, I can't keep these employees. And so it has real practical effects to people who are uninvolved with any wrongdoing when a company is suspended or debarred.
A second legislative proposal that the contracting industry opposed would have automatically suspended contractors who were indicted in connection with wartime contracting. But just yesterday, when Senator Claire McCaskill and several co-sponsors reintroduced their wartime contracting reform bill, that provision was toned down. Those contractors would now only be considered for suspension. In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.